Last week, federal authorities arrested an 18-year-old Minnesotan. He's charged with unleashing a variant of the blaster computer worm. At least 7,000 PCs were affected by his work. Jeffrey Lee Parson, known online as T-Kid, is now confined to his home and has been ordered by a judge to stay off the internet. Parsons faces one federal count of intentionally causing damage to a protected computer. That could put him behind bars until he's almost 30 and cost him as much as $250,000. Joining us now by phone from our office in New York City is Wired.com reporter Michelle DeLeo, and welcome back to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
No rest for the weary. Labor Day for you, too.
Oh, yeah.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And, Michelle, Jeffrey Lee Parsons is 18 years old, was described as academically advanced by his neighbors. What else do we know about him?
Well, we know that he fits the typical virus writer profile. People are saying he was into computers, he had a website, that he talked about viruses. He belonged to a little group of virus writers. And, of course, he was a loner, which, you know, we expect all criminals to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, he, as you say, seems to fit a lot of profiles. One thing that apparently he did that a lot of other virus writers don't do is brag about it.
Well, I think a lot of virus writers on his level brag about it. I think that this virus got a lot of attention because it was so widespread, because it hit businesses, it hit governments. So I think there's a lot of bragging kids out there. I don't think we always pay as much attention as we should. I mean, I was whacking myself around for not tracing him back. Because when you look at how the virus was released, how he was directing everybody back to his website, all the infected machines, it was like, man, we should have caught that within an hour of this kid releasing that.
Well, you know, can a person get, you know, the cred for an act like this and somehow still remain anonymous?
I think that they don't worry as much about other people knowing that it's them, especially the guys who write the really advanced viruses, as they like seeing the press mentions. They like it when we talk about it. They like watching the virus spread.
Mm-hmm. Now, the creators of So Big, which is another computer worm, and most of the blaster writers are still at large.
Yes.
This guy was just responsible for a piece of it. Now, how is he tracked down, and how are the others being sought?
Well, he was amazingly easy to track down because, like I said, it was like writing a bank robbery note on the back of your personalized deposit slip. I mean, the stuff that he put in the program directed infected computers back to his website, and his website was registered under his name with his home address. So this is not dazzling police work. We reporters should have gotten him, you know. I mean, he wasn't thinking. And you have to wonder, was he not the brightest pixie in the forest, or did he want to get caught, or did he just not realize what he was doing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so silly and so stupid.
But these other guys are apparently not quite so silly.
And not quite so stupid. I would be very surprised if we catch the guy who coded the original blaster.
Why is that?
I think I'm looking at the code. I don't see anything in there that's hinting back to him. I think he covered his tracks very well. I haven't seen anything on message boards. He's not there. You know, there's not really a trace of him. It doesn't mean that he's not going to, like, brag to somebody tomorrow about it. But so far, he's done a good job of staying quiet.
Well, if getting the, getting the word out, hey, I did it, if that's not the motivation, what is?
I think that would depend on the virus writer. We're hearing some things about people doing these to figure out new ways to send spam, now that the internet service providers are cracking down on that.
And that's what people think the So Big is.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could be a financial thing. It could be that they're trying to get into people's computers and do identity theft, so you've got a financial reason there again. I've spoken to virus writers who just liked watching it spread. You know, I mean, that's how they got, that was like their hobby.
Let's see if we get a caller. Don joins us from Rapid City in South Dakota.
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air, Don.
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Good. You know, ever since I've been listening to these computer viruses, I keep wondering to myself, what did they used to do to people who merely stole a man's horse in the Wild West? They would hang him. They would hang him, okay? Well, it's because that was the only way that guy could get around. That's, he relied on that. But what do they do to someone who kidnaps your child and terrorizes your family that way? You know, it's a capital punishment crime. Now, I'm not saying you should kill anybody that's a computer hacker, but you should certainly make the punishment no less than you would for international terrorism, which we're facing every day today, because that's what it is. It's just terrorizing millions of people.
It is international in that respect, but for most people, Don, it's a question of watching your virus scan work a little harder than it normally does.
And there's also rules coming in that if they can prove that you intended to cause damage and loss of life, we're talking about serious damage here.
Well, and I'm not talking loss of life, but I'm talking many people rely on the computer with all of their business files, large corporation files, people's identity theft, everything. It's just nothing more than terrorizing individuals on a mass scale.
No, I agree.
Okay.
But, how do you decide? I mean, I'm not intending capital punishment, but if somehow the punishment were such that people who aided and abetted or got involved in helping this spread in any way intentionally, if there was a large enough penalty, then people wouldn't do it, perhaps.
Maybe there'd be some way to make their fingers just really, really fat so they couldn't type anymore.
You know what I would love to see? I would love to see hackers mentor these kids. Hackers who really know what they're doing, go into the schools, talk to these kids, give them something else to do with their time. Show them that there are other ways to play with computers beyond sending viruses into the world.
Well, that's true. They're out there playing with other people's lives, and they don't really understand the impact it's having on other people unless it would affect them.
Right, and I think unless they have somebody whose skills they admire telling them that this is a dumb thing to do, that we're not going to see any change in it.
Well, Don, thanks very much, and good luck logging on.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to John in Rosemount, Minnesota.
Good morning.
Hi.
Or afternoon, rather.
Good afternoon.
I want to make a brief comment about your subject matter expert's broad application of a stereotype on what kind of a kid writes a virus. A lot of the traits she mentioned right away at the beginning of her segment, don't necessarily mean, because you're a quiet kid who's into computers and a loner type doesn't, make you a criminal type or a virus writer. And a lot of the kids with those traits are the ones that are, grow up to help write security tools and network protection tools to protect us from worms and viruses. I'll take your comments off here.
Okay, thanks for the call, John. Go ahead, Michelle.
Absolutely, and I think anytime that you look at these profiles, like I said at the beginning, it's always the loner. I know a lot of loners who have very happy, productive lives. So you can't say just because somebody fits the profile, that's what they're doing, or that there are no virus writers who don't fit the profile, but it does seem that a lot of these kids have general traits in common.
Today, Al Jazeera, the Arab News Network, relaunched its English language website. This is 5 months after it was hacked and taken down. Once a site has been hacked and then fixed, does it somehow become more attractive for other hackers to go up and try to knock it down again?
I think it depends on the site. We've seen a lot of repeated attacks with the Record Industries, the RIAA site,
mm-hmm.
just because people really disagree with what they stand for and how they're going about doing it. I think Al Jazeera may have that same problem depending on what happens politically, because unfortunately people think that it's a good thing to restrict that information, if they don't agree with it.
Yeah, the guy who pleaded guilty to hacking it the last time has sent them to a site with American flags and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that is not what hacking's about. Hacking is about information. It's about finding things out. It's not about shutting people up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you've got kids who think it's a clever thing to do, and just because they can do it, they do it. But I had written an article after Al Jazeera was taken down the first time, and real hackers, people with real skills, were totally upset and angry about that. That's just not part of what hacking is about.
Michelle DeLeo, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Michelle DeLeo is a reporter for Wired.com with us by phone from her office in New York. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.